What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Dama back on the show, and it is Monday, July 17th. Summer League for the Washington Wizards is officially over. I think that there's one more game to be played. I think it's either... Is the championship game tonight or tomorrow?
I thought it was tonight.
It may be, yeah. So the Houston Rockets play whoever in the championship game. I forget who it was, but the Wizards did not get there. They did not do well enough, which you would think that they would have done a lot better because they have guys. I mean, their entire starting five are guys that were on an actual NBA team during the year, but guys like Rollins and Baldwin really hadn't had the experience. Koulibaly didn't have the NBA experience. Vucevic didn't have the NBA experience. And Xavier Cooks is Xavier Cooks. So we really didn't have a standout, I would say. But I was definitely intrigued by our two draft picks from this past draft with Bilal Koulibaly and Tristan Vucevic. I think that there's a lot to like out of both these guys. But it's clear that these are more long-term projected type players, which when watching them play, you can see that they definitely have some game and they're very smart. They have good traits for their respective positions, but it's just going to take them some time before they're probably going to be considered legit NBA threats in an 8-9 man rotation. I think that Koulibaly is going to be kind of thrown in the mix immediately, just kind of by force. And, you know, these first 2 years are just going to, mostly, I feel, just getting him comfortable to the game. Because it's, I mean, we already saw him struggle a little bit against some summer league guys, but now you're going into where you're actually going to be going up against rotation guys on actual NBA rosters. So it's definitely going to take him some time. But overall, I thought that Koulibaly showed enough to see what Will Dawkins' thought process was when taking him number 7 overall. So I felt very good. I mean, I would, if I had to grade it, I'd probably give it a solid, maybe like a B minus or a B, just because I was hoping the shooting percentages would be a little bit higher. But I mean, overall, a guy's first summer league appearance, it wasn't bad. I thought that it was okay, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I came away impressed with pretty much all of the young guys. You know, both of Dawkins' draft picks and even Tommy's last draft pick and Johnny Davis. I felt like, you know, summer league, I don't try to give a career arc on summer league play, because a lot of it is just, you know, it just doesn't matter. Like, if you look at the last, you know, in summer league MVPs, like, none of them have gone on to be like all NBA players in the league, right? So it's just kind of like it just allows you to kind of evaluate some traits and see how they go about their business, and maybe can find an early role for them. But it's not a precursor for their success in the NBA. So I just like what I saw from Bilal, just the athleticism.
Yeah,
he's just so smooth, man. It was some of the same stuff I saw on him pre-draft. Like, he just effortlessly kind of slithers past people. He has a really quick first step. Like, and it's not nothing he's doing, you know, it's not like he Kyrie Irving with the handle, but it's like a simple little jab or in and out dribble, and then he's just by you, and next thing you know, he's up in the air. And the only thing you can do is either foul him or give up a layup. So, and then in transition, he's kind of like baby Giannis. Like, he's just hard to stop, especially when you get into that Euro step. It's just really hard to stop. So I think that's something, his athleticism, and then you see the shot blocking, that's stuff that's going to immediately translate. Like, day one, right, he's going to step on the floor for the Wizards and be one of their better perimeter defenders. And then, like, with Johnny, I saw him starting to kind of develop some crafty ways to get shots off, because last year as a rookie, he just looked like he was playing in a league that was like too athletic for him. Mm-hmm. The stuff he was trying to do at Wisconsin, he was trying to do that in the NBA, and it just wasn't working. It was like all the guys were sitting on it. And then I think over the summer, he kind of worked on his game, kind of got acclimated to the speed of the game, and worked on some kind of tricks of the trade to kind of create separation with, you know, some body bumps, dropping the shoulder, little arm bar, stuff like that, to kind of create some separation to get shots off. Because you're not going to just be able to – he's not an elite athlete. He's not like Bilal, where he can just blow by you off of one step. He's going to have to find crafty ways to use his size, you know, step backs here and there, little floaters to kind of get his shots off. And I thought he did a lot of that this summer league. So that was a present – you know, that was good to see. And then with the big man Vuk, I just felt like, I mean, he kind of showed what he showed in the summer league. I mean, not the summer league, in the combine. Like he can shoot the ball, man. Mm-hmm. He's got some real mobility with him. So I think all of it. Hopefully, we can get him over here, because I'm seeing now that they talking about he might not come over now. So but yeah, I think all three of them showed some transferable traits for the real games.
I think if in terms of Vucevic coming over really quick, I think that the Wizards are going to try to push to make the playoffs this year, and if that's their goal, then I think that saving Vucevic for another year and letting him progress somewhere where he can actually get some legit playing time, he's not taking up a roster spot. Then I think that's probably the best course of action. Now, I'd still be really excited if he came over, but I think it does make sense from a competitive standpoint. Again, if they're really serious about winning, listening to Will Dawkins talk, I mean, he seems to be pretty serious about Poole and Kuzma, not only those two, but Tyus Jones as well. So I think that those are kind of the three that they're going to move forward with. They don't seem desperate to want to move off from either one of those guys. All talked about very highly. I think the fact that they brought Kuzma back in and of itself speaks a lot, because they easily could have just not re-signed him. And I think Wizards fans still would have been pretty happy with where the roster was. So, you know, the fact that Will Dawkins keeps talking about these guys, and I think just shows that they're not looking at this as a rebuilding situation. And he has said as much. You know, they based on the latest podcast that we heard off the bench with Chris Miller, you guys can go check it out on the Washington Wizards YouTube page, but or on the podcasting platforms. But they basically said that they made the moves that they felt like they needed to make to go forward to be successful. And I think that large in part that points to the trade of Bradley Beal, which I know that Wizards fans have been kind of clamoring for a number of years now. So they came in, didn't hesitate on doing that. And now I think the positive thing for the Wizards going forward, and especially with Kyle Kuzma's new contract, you're going to have Koulibaly on a rookie contract. If they decide to extend Tyus Jones, it should be pretty reasonable. The Jordan Poole contract, maybe a little bit of an overpay. We'll see how it plays out this year with him being a number one option. But I think that the getting some cap flexibility and just some breathing room was really important for them, because they want to have the ability to improve. You know, the team this year is not going to be the final product. This is not the final stage of what they want to do with the team. This is just the beginning, and it's a pretty good start. But I didn't mean to get way off track there, but going back to some of the summer league stuff real quick before we dive more into the Wizards offseason and the moves that were made, and then we'll touch on some stuff around the league too. I thought that Ryan Rollins had a really rough first game, but after that, I thought that he looked really good. He's definitely more of a scoring guard, but he did put up good assist numbers. He had 5 steals in one game, and you know, from that aspect, he was good defensively, but like he was good with putting up those numbers defensively. But overall, defensively, I wasn't that impressed. Same with Patrick Baldwin, but I was actually really surprised with Patrick Baldwin's ability to get rebounds, because his archetype really didn't seem like the type of guy that would get a decent amount of boards, but whenever I checked the box score during the games, he had like 6 to 8 rebounds or something like that, which I feel like is pretty good for, again, a player of his size, 6'7", 6'8", not really that athletic. So was pleasantly surprised with those two. But again, Baldwin being a former first-round pick and picked by Golden State, we knew he was going to have some game. And I wish that he would have gotten a little bit more time to play with the starting five, because I don't know what was up with their Xavier Cooks fetish or whatever. And he played fine. Like, overall, to be honest, Cooks was probably the best summer league player. Like, if we're keeping it real, but I just feel like his type of player and his age and everything, it just didn't make sense for him to get those kind of minutes.
Yeah, he's 28 years old. I mean, it was ridiculous that he was even playing in the summer league. But I get it's probably a bodies thing. Like, they need a body, so, you know, get him out there, see what he can do. And they're trying to evaluate him, too, because they didn't bring him here. So that's an opportunity for them to do that. But, yeah, like, it didn't make sense for him to be there from jump.
And I think also, too, it may help with other teams' evaluations of him as well, because if there's a team out there that'll give you a second-round pick for him, a team that's cap-strapped and is going to need decent depth, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, probably not the player that a lot of teams are going to want to get, but he's a very patient player, a very smart player, sneaky athletic in certain spots. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if a contender thought that he could help and they bring him in to be like the 12th guy or 11th guy or something like that. So either way, summer league, it was okay. You know, some of the guys off the bench, I thought that Donovan Williams really impressed me the most out of all the guys that we haven't already talked about. He gets after it defensively, has some nice athleticism, especially in transition, hit a couple three balls, was with the Atlanta Hawks, but then they waived him about a month or so ago. I think a lot of people came away impressed with DJ Stewart or Jules Bernard. Though some people liked Alexander. Given his age, I think he's just more of a go-go player. But I would definitely consider a two-way contract for Donovan Williams, Bernard, or Stewart. They still have one left. Currently, they have Quentin Jackson. I can't pronounce the other guy's name from the Thunder. Eugene something, starts with an O. And then, so the Wizards have one more spot. Jay Huff, who was with the Wizards last year, actually was with the Rockets in Summer League, but signed a two-way contract with the Denver Nuggets. So he's hopped around a bit, but found another home, so good for him. But were there any other guys outside of our main youth that you thought the Wizards maybe should try and invest in a little bit?
Yeah, Donovan Williams stood out to me. He kind of has like, he's a scorer, and I tend to always lean on the guys that can put the ball in the hoop. But at 6'6", kind of wiry, kind of reminds me of like Will Barton a little bit. I wouldn't mind bringing him in at his size, guy that can handle, create his own shot, look like he can guard up and down the rotation a little bit. I wouldn't mind giving him that second two-way, because I think who has the other two-way spot right now?
So the league changed this year with the rules, so each team is allowed three spots now, and the other two are Quentin Jackson and that one guy that played for the Thunder and the Pistons.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, so with those two, yeah, because Quentin is like a two as a guard. Then you got the other guy who's more like a power forward. Right. Then if you do Williams, he would be another kind of like guard wing. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind it. I'm just thinking positionally. I don't know if they kind of view it that way. Like, do you go big man since you already got a guard and another forward there to develop, or do you just take the guy who flashed the most? And to me, that would be Williams. So. I wouldn't mind him going that direction at all.
Yeah, I think that I would add a wing like that. And the reason I say that is because at point guard, we already have Ryan Rollins, who is still young. We have plenty of young power forwards. You still have Denny. You have Patrick Baldwin. At center, you have Vucevic. And really, the only young other guard that we have outside of Koulibaly, who I view more of kind of as a wing right now, but the only other one is Johnny Davis. And if Johnny Davis isn't able to translate the type of physicality into the regular season against actual NBA players, then there's probably, you know, a little bit of a hole there behind Jordan Poole. So to me, that would be the type of player that I'd be trying to invest in. It would be like a 2-3. So I think Donovan Williams fits that mold. And again, like you, I think that out of all the other guys, I was the most impressed by him. I'm not sure why the Hawks didn't want to bring him back. Maybe it was, you can give me a regular deal or you can let me go and I'll play somewhere else kind of thing. But I don't know.
There was no way for him to crack that rotation at all. I mean, if you look, they have so many wings and guards on that team. Like, you know, it was just no way. He probably wanted out him damn self so he can get somewhere, you know, in a more rebuild situation where he might actually have a shot. So
going more into the Wizards offseason in general now, and man, this was a fun one. I think that this was the most fun I've had during a Wizards offseason in a long time, moving off from your franchise player and Bradley Beal for, I think in hindsight, is a really good deal for the Wizards. I think that at the time, a lot of people were a little bit upset, maybe, or maybe not upset, but underwhelmed with the return that they got. But I thought just the ability to get your cap healthier with his tier player, I thought was a good move in and of itself. And I know that we had, who's the radio guy that we had on? His name is blanking on me right now.
Oh, Craig Hoffman.
Yes, Craig Hoffman. Yeah. How could I forget? But yeah, and he was saying that he thought the deal was going to be more of a salary dump. And I guess it turned out that he was right in that regard. But I guess I would just say that if Bradley Beal had gotten traded to another team, if we would have been able to get a first round pick or two. I know it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, we did what Brad wanted to do. But I guess I'm just wondering at his peak value throughout this process, what it actually would have been. But I don't hate the idea from moving on from him. And I think that most fans were pleased with the decision.
Yeah, I mean, you knew once this new front office was coming in, he was getting moved because it just wasn't working. Like, they weren't going to – you didn't need to see any more information with this team to see, you know, that it wasn't going anywhere. I just kind of thought they would go into the season with him, with the whole group, just retaining the assets, and then at the deadline, you know, shipping everybody off for – you know, for draft picks, you know, but yeah, but Beal having that no trade clause, once he said, I'm going to the Suns and the Suns only, like it was just nothing. You were going to get what the Suns had left. It didn't matter if, you know, the Spurs was offering the number one pick for Wembanyama, it wouldn't have mattered. So, I think my pushback was more on, people were trying to dictate value based on what they thought about Beal, the basketball player, not because he had a no trade clause.
Right.
Like, people were saying, oh, he sucks. He's barely a top 50 player. So you'd be lucky to get a first round pick. And I'm like, no, because if he wanted to go to Miami, we would have got a first round pick, probably would have got multiple first round picks, but he didn't want to go there. So he wanted to go to the one team that had interest that had no damn first round picks. And even the Bucks, I think, hopped in there trying to get him too. They had no first round picks. So if he would have went to one of them two teams, you weren't getting the first round pick back because they had none to give. Now I don't mind the abundance of seconds we got and then those first round.
It's not bad.
Those first round swaps could get real interesting.
Yes.
So, because when I first saw the deal, I was like, and we got Chris Paul, I'm like, nah, they not done. This is a two-level trade. You know, everybody's kind of freaking out. I was like, man, I'm going to just wait and see. Because it just does. Chris Paul being here just never made sense. Like, it was just no way he was staying on this roster. Like, you get you're trying to clear your books and you trade for an older Chris Paul. Like, that man ain't trying to be on a rebuilding Wizards, man. Get that man somewhere he can go compete for a title. So then when they made the second move and then you flip Chris Paul for a protected first and more seconds and then Jordan Poole and then Patrick Baldwin and Rollins, it's like, oh, okay, now the Beal deal looks a lot more, it looks a lot better now. Because when you look at the full haul of it, you basically got three young players, one of them who has all-star 25-point-per-game upside, and then, you know, you got a bunch of second-round picks, a protected first, and then a bunch of second-round picks. So if you had just did the deal straight up with the Warriors from jump, right, and it just made a, you know, three-team deal right out the gate for Beal, I think we would think fans would look at it totally different than how it ended up being kind of announced, where it had to be one part and then they had to go do the second part. So yeah. I'm happy with it. Like, Jordan Poole was on my list of young guys that I felt like should have been a target for Beal anyway, like him and Maxey. Those were the two.
We were talking about getting Poole for Porzingis a lot. So
Yeah, I would have did that. I would have did either one of those. Whether you felt like you were losing a better player or not, it wasn't about that. It was about getting off the money and getting younger and banking on that upside. So, yeah, like I Jordan Poole was definitely on the list. And so for them to kind of make it happen like that, that mean they had that foresight. So shout out to them, man.
I do like that there are other quality veterans on this team that have some recognition around the league, not only being able to retain Kyle Kuzma on what is an amazing contract, by the way. So credit to Dawkins and Winger on that. And we'll get into that in a second, but not only him, but Tyus Jones as well, because as much as we were ready for the Jordan Poole show, and we're still going to get it, it's going to be a pool party in DC all year long, but it's nice to have other respectable threats on the floor. So it's not just him. And then, oh, they double team Poole, they pass it to Denny for three, brick. Oh, they had a double team, they pass it to Koulibaly for three, air ball. You know what I mean? So they need guys that are threats and can do stuff with the ball in their hands, just so it's not too much pressure on one or two guys. And I felt like that's how it was with Bradley Beal for too long. And by the time that they were able to acquire guys like Kuzma and Porzingis, when you looked around the rest of the league and where it was heading, it was just we were always a step or two behind from what everyone else around the league was doing. So it was time to move on, and definitely excited about our new guys coming in. Definitely excited about retaining Kuzma too. And I know that everyone just kind of wanted a full-on rebuild, just rip the Band-Aid and be done with it. But I think that if we were to have kept someone from our big three from last year, just based on leadership and intangibles, because those are two important things to have when you're working with a rebuilding roster with some young players, I think that that's Kuzma to a T, you know, hands down. So out of the three, it made the most sense to retain him.
Yeah, I mean, when we made the Chris Paul deal for Jordan Poole, and I'm just looking at the roster, I'm just like, this team needs another scorer, man. And I don't want it, like you said, I don't want to see Jordan Poole dribble, passing it to you know, Denny and a rookie, Bilal Koulibaly, and a bunch of young guys that ain't really built for that yet. That's not ready for that yet. And I think the staff, the front office, kind of saw that. Like, no, we need another guy here. No matter how good you think he is, like, Kuzma can put the ball in the hoop. He's a guy that teams are going to have to actually game plan for. They're not gonna sag 20 feet off or put a big man on him, right? Like, you're gonna have to game plan for Kyle Kuzma and Jordan Poole. So, and I think that allows you to better evaluate what you have around those guys. Because, like, for real, if Denny is going to go next level, if Bilal is going to look like, you know, a star, you know, day one, or Johnny Davis, whoever you want to plug in as the next young guy to pop for the Wizards, it's got to be in the structure of a legitimate roster. Like, it can't be okay, we got the worst team, we got the worst roster in the league, and we just going to give a guy 20 shots whose game isn't really built for that. No, like he's got it. They got to do it in the context of a winning roster or somewhat competitive roster. And then you might see flashes here and there. And then you can say, okay, well, then now let's elevate his role. But yeah, I like what they did. And then they get it at 490, basically. I'm wondering now, like, was Kuzma really chasing, like, the biggest bag possible? Or was he, did he really just want to come back to D.C. if the opportunity presented itself?
I mean, you would have to think that, and I don't know. I think that with the new CBA, it, originally, I'm sure he probably had a lot of suitors where he could have gotten a lot more money. But, I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, what were some of the other teams that were interested in him at the deadline? Phoenix, Sacramento. And if you look at both those teams right now, like, just, you know, for example, it doesn't make sense for either of those teams right now to invest that type of money because – the Kings already re-upped Harrison Barnes, and as soon as they did that, I said, okay, so Kuzma's not going there. And then they drafted Keegan Murray last year. So that it didn't make sense for them to pour that kind of resources, to pour those kind of resources in for a player like that. And then for Phoenix, it really didn't make sense. And even if they wanted to, they wouldn't have been able to afford it. So I think that the market kind of shrinked a little bit just because of the new CBA. But also, I mean, Kuzma said himself that he's really enjoyed his time in D.C., and I think that the fact that he's going to be the main voice in the locker room now he may not be the go-to guy all the time. I think the consensus is that's going to be Jordan Poole. Like, I think he's going to be the franchise guy going forward. But in terms of having a voice and being the relationship builder between the staff and the players and being able to be the main voice in the locker room, I think that that was probably something that was important to him. And I think that Kuzma's always had good intentions. He's easily a fan favorite. His personality just makes him a really likable and enjoyable guy, especially when you consider that over the past couple of years, he's gave us some really great moments basketball-wise. So I think that it was something that I wasn't for sure was going to happen. But especially given how that contract turned out with an annual decrease throughout these 4 years. So his first year, he's going to make the most money at a little over 25. And his last year, he's going to be making a little over 19. So this is really a steal of a contract for the Wizards. And it was a no-brainer to get that done then, you know?
Yeah, for sure, man. I think it's interesting, you know, like Kuzma came in with the Lakers as the young guy, kind of, you know, with a bunch of other young players, Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart and Julius Randle and all those guys. And then LeBron shows up. And then, you know, it kind of, LeBron had to kind of show the young guys that 1 year before he ended up traded all of them. But it's kind of like now Kuzma gets to kind of be that guy to the young guys here in D.C. And you saw him kind of try to embrace that role last year, kind of taking Denny under his wing and, you know, even Rui before ultimately that relationship soured with the front office. But yeah, now he gets to really, really lock in on that and be kind of that leader because, you know, he's got his ring. He's won a championship. Now it's kind of about cementing his legacy as the, you know, as a player, individual player. And I think that leadership role is a big part of that for him.
Yeah, I mean, our two top guys right now have won rings with Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma, and both playing significant roles. And Jordan Poole has spent an immense amount of time with like championship level players. Like Poole has spent a shit ton around a time alongside Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Even though I know a lot of people feel indifferent about Draymond Green, and I understand it, but he's still a damn good basketball player, especially considering that his skill set really isn't all that fantastic. And then Kyle Kuzma has spent time with LeBron James and Kobe Bryant. These are two of the greatest players to ever put on sneakers and step on an NBA court. So, yeah. You know, I think that not only them winning a championship, but being around all-time great players, I think is what excites me a lot too, because when things get rough, I think that those are two guys, even that Jordan Poole is still at the young age that he's at, are going to be able to calm the guys down, be able to reassess and just, you know, keep the mentality of keep your head down, do your work, and eventually you'll see the fruits of that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as you when the going gets tough, man, they got some winning moments and experiences they can lean on and show those young guys. So I'm excited to watch it, man. I don't think I'm not putting them in the playoffs or nothing like that, but I think they could just as well be a very competitive, you know, 11 seed, just like what they were last year. And I think something underrated about the guys they have is that they're, for the most part, they're healthy. Like, you know, Kuzma, Poo, Kispert, Gafford, I'm probably, and Denny. Tyus. They've all played 150 games total over the last two seasons. You know, that's rare now in today's NBA to get, you know, that many guys on a roster that's going to give you, you know, 65 games a season minimum. And I think that's an underrated aspect of your win-loss record. So just being available, you know, you can get an extra 5 to 8 wins that you might have otherwise not got, even if you might have had a better roster, but those guys just can't stay on the floor together. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Right. And I think going back, and I think that's actually one of the biggest points that we hadn't touched on yet, but I think the availability, especially when you looked at our the top of our team for the past couple of years, well, you had Beal and Porzingis, and those two guys, Porzingis has an injury history. Now, he was able to stay relatively healthy for us since he put on a Wizards jersey, and I really appreciate that. And I think that he's kind of wised up with how to use his body a little bit. Still a really effective player, and I wish him nothing but the best in Boston. But I think that that's something that if you're a new management team coming in, you can't keep that the same, because that's not something that you can bank on happening. Like, even, like, they're not going to be able to stay healthy. They've proved that, specifically Bradley Beal. And it's not the player's fault. It's not an attack against the player. But, again, when people's jobs are on the line and these players make millions of dollars, you just want to make sure that, as a business owner or a manager, that you're using your money appropriately. And I think that for them, they just wanted to, first off, be able to stop using the excuses of being injured all the time, because that was always Tommy's go-to whenever he was asked a question about why the team was struggling. It was, well, we can't stay healthy. But when you're responsible for building the team that can't stay healthy, then, you know, I mean, it's kind of your problem in your evaluation. Like, that's your flaw that you then have to figure out and correct. And he refused to do it. So Tommy had several opportunities to save his ass. But I think that that's one thing that I was really impressed with this new regime. As soon as they came in, they figured it out pretty quickly. Like, nope, we just need to get guys, I think, first of all, that can be respectable in the locker room, but also that can stay healthy.
For sure. I do think too, some of it, you know, in regards to Beal, was kind of him just kind of dogging some of it. Like, cause it's like, what am I going out here trying to play 65 plus games for a team that's, you know, a 12 seed, 11 seed. Right. But part of that is talent acquisition. Like, if you don't acquire the talent to kind of step up when your guys are out, and then you kind of get, you know, I mean, you're getting ran off the floor when a guy is hurt. Like, it's just no way you should be that dependent on DeLon Wright to be in the lineup to win games.
Right. If that's your talking point, you're unserious as a franchise.
If we would have had DeLon Wright, we would have been, you know, a 9 seed. Like, come on, man. Like, that means yeah, your team ain't that talented. Like, so, you know, it's just all of that ended up coming back to Tommy. You know, you didn't build a talented enough roster. You didn't build a roster that could stay healthy and on the floor, and now you're out of a job. So,
but players gone. Taj Gibson, it looks like, is not going to be back. Kendrick Nunn is not going to be back. Those were our two unrestricted free agents. Not guys that I wanted to bring back anyway. So it's fine. We had one restricted free agent, Jay Huff. The Wizards chose to not extend him a qualifying offer, so he became an unrestricted free agent. Like we said at the top of the show, he just signed a way agreement with the Denver Nuggets. So, but I would have liked if the Wizards brought him back. But after drafting Vucevic, it was like, yeah, he's younger. He probably has a better trajectory long term. There wasn't a spot for him. In terms of trading guys away, Bradley Beal, Porzingis, I've already touched on that. Monte Morris was also dealt to the Pistons for a second round pick, which I thought was probably the trade value that the Wizards were going to get for him. I think he'll be another solid, steady guard to help Detroit. So I think that's a good move for both sides there. But I mean, overall, I thought that we had a really good offseason. And I think that, you know, maybe there's still something else to come, but I'm not sure they're going to make another trade. I think that they're pretty comfortable with what they have right now. Originally, it was reported that Gallinari was probably going to get bought out. But since that reporting has come out, pretty much everyone has, and even Will Dawkins mentioned earlier today in the Off the Bench podcast, he mentioned his name specifically. So I think that the plan is to go into the season with Gallinari as well. He mentioned Muscala. So I think that they're pretty much done for the offseason. And I would say that they had a really good one.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at this big man situation. Like, if Vuk, if they don't get Vuk here, who's your backup? You're gonna rock with Muscala as your backup center,
I guess.
And then who's the third big? I mean, because we know, I mean, there's going to be injuries. So it's like, okay, if Gafford goes down, you're gonna rock with Muscala as your starting center,
I guess.
I don't know, man. I think they might go get one more guy. Like, I just don't know who. I don't know in what fashion, whether it be via trade or signing a guy. But I'm curious to see how this big man situation goes, because I don't know Muscala as your premier backup. Like, I just don't know. I mean, I know with the Thunder last year, they just didn't play a center at all with Chet being hurt. You know, they just kind of played a bunch of forwards. And I'm wondering if Dawkins is going to kind of ride that. Like, it just, well, if we got to throw Anthony Gill in there, maybe Denny plays him five. We'll figure it out. But maybe it's just not a position they value like that.
One of the guys that I was actually so interested in, because I was looking at that too in terms of big men, like, they could use another one if they wanted to. But he actually got signed earlier today. But Omer Yurtseven, who just signed with the Utah Jazz, so that was a guy that was left on the market that I was like, yeah, I wouldn't have minded him coming in and being a backup or a break glass in case of emergency type guy. But he's gone now, so, and I haven't looked at the rest of the center market, so I don't remember names off the top of my head. But I mean, I'm hoping that Vucevic comes over. I'm just not sure if the Wizards are necessarily gonna want to like go all in on that this year. I mean, I'd be fine with, like, personally, if it were me, I would put him as the backup center from day one just to get him the experience. But again, if they really want to try and win, then, you know, maybe they just have Muscala be the backup and then they use Tristan when injuries happen. Or because I mean, here's the thing anyway, if you sign another center, it's probably not going to be that great. So would you rather play a JaVale McGee level player, or would you rather play Vucevic, who you just drafted and is still 20 years old? So it's like, yeah, I'd probably rather play Vucevic.
I think Vuk, it could be better than Muscala. That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, so if you don't get Vuk over here, like, Muscala to me is like a third big. Like, he's the backup to the backup. So if, say, Gafford gets hurt, like, if Muscala has to be a starter for a number of games, like, I don't want to see that. Yeah. Like, he offers nothing. Like, he's not a really good screener, not really a plus rebounder. He don't really defend. So it's like, he can just hit a three every now and then. So it's like, I don't know. I'm kind of like, what are we doing here at the big, at that five spot? Like I said, assuming Vuk is not coming over. That's just kind of what I'm looking at. Like, what are we doing? Because it ain't like they have another young guy in the pipeline that can get in and play some minutes.
Right, because, and here's the thing too, and we talked about it like ad nauseum with Gafford, but I don't even view him as a starting center right now. I think that he's best suited as a backup. and he hasn't been able to play more than 20 minutes a game as a Wizard. He has foul trouble issues. He had some conditioning concerns, especially early on when we got him. So I think his archetype is good enough to be a starting center, but the thing is, he's just not consistent enough. And if he has to play 28, 29 minutes a night, what does that look like over the course of the season?
Yeah, because that 28, 29 minutes could mean fouled out, or, you know, putting the team on the foul line, the opponent on the foul line too damn much. Because we haven't seen it. Like, I think this the year where he get to prove if he can be a, you know, 25-minute per game plus center. But so far, I mean, last year he was playing, what, 17 minutes a game? So now we're going to jump that by almost 10 minutes a night? I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, I think they might need to go and get another guy.
Do you have someone in mind?
I do not. But I'm thinking, you know, shoot, JaVale McGee, I wouldn't mind that. Like, that's a guy Gafford could learn a lot from. A whole lot from. That's a champion. He'd have been in the league for, I don't know, however long. And they have similar archetypes as players. So that's a guy that if Dallas moves on from him, I wouldn't mind bringing him in. Like, again, it's like a kind of break glass in case of emergency guy. Like, I would much rather JaVale McGee in that locker room mentoring Gafford and being able to get some spot minutes here and there when needed versus a Muscala. Like, Muscala just, no. Does nothing to help you win games, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Dallas has a plethora of centers right now. They just re-signed Dwight Powell. They drafted Derek Lively at 12. So, exactly. So I think those are the two odd guys out, would be Holmes and McGee, I think, are the two there. So, you know, I'm sure they're available if you offer the right price. But I guess that's the thing for the Wizards is, like, you know, what is an appropriate price for those types of guys? So, and I'm just, you know, would Dallas, because they don't have a lot of stretching with their bigs, you know, they have Kleber, but he's more of a four. So would they be fine with a Muscala and McGee swap? You know, McGee only played like 8-9 minutes a game for them last year. So it's not like he played a big role for the Mavericks in his time there. So I don't know, but. Yeah, I mean, I said on the Wizards group chat podcast with Chase Carroll and Ryan Oliver, if you guys haven't checked that out yet, please make sure that you do, by the way. Some really cool dudes and good pals on the Twitter sphere. But I said that I would have liked Drew Eubanks, but he ended up signing with Phoenix, which I think is going to be a good signing for them. So that would have been a nice tier guy to have.
Yeah, I would have liked that a lot. I would have liked that a lot. I think he got a chance to play some decent minutes for them, too, as the backup to Ayton. Just looking at their roster. I mean, I'm looking here now. You got me looking now at available centers. Like, you got a Frank Kaminsky, Willie Hernan Gomez. I wouldn't mind somebody like him.
Hernan Gomez signed overseas.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, well, scratch him off the list.
Bobo would have been a nice one, but oh well.
See, I see him more as a four.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more like a big body, like a Bismack. You got a Bismack Biyombo. Somebody like that. Got Dwayne Dedmon. I like the idea of Bismack Biyombo. Somebody defender. He gonna rebound, play hard. That guy. Surprise, he's only 30? So like he's been in the league longer than that. But yeah, I would mind somebody like that. I just think Muscala don't offer you much of nothing, man. If that's a guy you gotta play, you know, say Gafford picks up three fouls in the first quarter, like what you gonna do if Vuk not here?
Yeah, I mean Muscala's a nice floor stretcher and I think he's a really smart player, so but I think those are probably the only two redeeming qualities immediately that's coming to mind, because I don't think he's going to be a good rebounder. I don't think he's going to be that great of a defender. So it's like, you know, how much is he actually helping? So
yeah, I mean, he was last year for the Thunder, 14 minutes a game. And then he got moved to Boston and was playing 16 minutes a night. I mean, I get he can shoot the three, though. Definitely not a rebounder.
Yeah.
So.
Other than the center position, how, I mean, I guess we can start back up with point guard and work our way down. But right now, essentially, it's going to be Tyus Jones. We assume that Tyus Jones is going to start. And then you have DeLon Wright as your backup, and then Ryan Rollins as your third. I think that's good enough to be competitive, right? Like, if you told me without any context with the rest of the team, like, that's my point guard rotation, it certainly is not the worst. And I think that the one thing with Tyus Jones that we'll get that we didn't really get to see with Monte Morris, but I think just his mentality when he has the ball in his hand is entirely different. I think he's going to be more aggressive. And given that we don't have, you know, the, I mean, we have some scores, but we don't have the best talent on this team. We need someone who's going to be able to get into the paint and create and be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I think that Tyus is more so that guy than Monte or Dinwiddie.
Yeah, so the counting stats kind of show Tyus and Monte to be very, very similar players. But in watching him and the times I've seen him in Memphis and just watching over some of his film again once we got him, I think he offers a lot more like off the bounce creation, especially like getting by his man, getting to the rim than Monte. He gets into the teeth of the defense much more for me than Monte ever did. I still have questions about just his size on the defensive end, especially if you're going to pair him next to Jordan Poole. So personally, I think I would rather either starting DeLon next to Poole or going even like a Johnny Davis or a Bilal. Somebody put some size next to Jordan Poole on a defensive end, but I can understand why they would go Tyus. If winning is not the biggest priority this year, and then maybe you're trying to build up Tyus' value for, you know, a flip in January, I get why you would start him out the gate.
Yeah, I think that it would just be nice having another steady presence in that starting five too. So, I mean, I'm not hell-bent one way or another. Like, if they wanted to start Johnny Davis or if they wanted to just throw Koulibaly out there, maybe they want to start both Kispert and Denny. You know, I mean, again, they have some options, which is nice, and it certainly is not the best selection of choices, but it's what we got to work with, and I think that they want to see what they can get out of some of these other young guys. So,
you know. He's definitely going to run your offense. He's going to run it well, no doubt about it.
The other two guards right now, so are Johnny Davis and Landry Shamet, and I think just from a defensive standpoint where I feel like Wes Unseld Jr. is probably going to favor, and you want to make sure that you do your due diligence on Johnny before you figure out if he is a guy you want to keep or not. I think as of right now, he kind of has to be slated to get some playing time right away. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like it would be organizationally responsible for him to get some playing time right away so that you can try and get up to speed on the process. Okay, is this a guy you want to keep? Is this a guy, okay, he really just isn't built for this game. Can we try and get something for him then? But you have to get there by finding out, and you find out by putting him on the floor.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you, yeah, top 10 pick, you got to play it. Even if Landry Shamet is probably more useful right now today, I think with Davis, Johnny Davis, you got to play him. You got to see what you got. Like, you're not competing for anything this year. See what your top 10 pick can do.
Yeah, so right now for the backcourt, I would say Tyus and DeLon. And then you have Poole and Johnny, and that would be the starter and backup for our one and two so far. Are you with me on that, or would you change something?
Agree 100%. For how I think they're going to go, yes.
Right. I think that Kispert is going to start. Now, Kispert and Denny have had similar numbers in terms of who started more games, but at the end of the day, Corey started more games and started more towards the end of the season. So I think that they're going to go into the season with Kispert as the starter, and I think that that means that Koulibaly has to be his backup there.
I think that's what Wes is going to do. I totally agree.
Power forward, obviously, Kuzma. He played some three, and I don't think that it really matters which he plays, like, three or four, given that he's playing next to Kispert. He's probably more of a four. I think he's more of a matchup problem at the four, Kuzma. And then that means that Denny's probably his backup there. There's no reason for them to do anything else.
Yeah, I think that's where the rotation is at right now. Yeah, initially I was kind of thinking maybe they would start Kuz at the three. But that was before we drafted Bilal. So, I think Kuz at the four, it just makes sense. And then Denny can kind of run the offense with the second unit, kind of like what he was doing last year.
And then we talked about the five already, but I would imagine they're going to go Gafford. And then yes. I still think that even if Vucevic comes over, they're going to start the season giving the backup minutes to Muscala. But eventually, I think that would switch over to Vucevic at some point in the season as the backup.
Yes, assuming Vuk comes over, yeah, I would agree. Gafford, shoe-in starter just by default, tenure, and then his talent, I think, yeah, he's the starter. And then, yeah, Muscala, and then Vuk behind him.
So that's sort of what our 10-man rotation is looking like right now, at least on paper. And again, maybe there's a small move or two that changes that by a little bit. I am curious, though, what would you do? Like, we just talked about what we think the Wizards are going to do, but what would you do from day one?
I would try to get more balance on the floor defensively. Like, I think Jordan Poole functions best when he's the lead guard. Like his biggest games were, you know, no Steph Curry, and he was the guy. So it was him, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, and Kevin Looney. And he just got to, you know, kind of run the show. And I think that's the role I envision him in. If you're trying to see him as like, you know, a future all-star type player, you know, 25 a game score, like, I think you got to kind of let him just do this thing, give him the keys, man. But next to him, obviously, he's 6'4", 6'5", slight build. Like, you need a big guard next to him to kind of do those things defensively. So I would put either DeLon there. I mean, they can go three different ways. They can go DeLon, they can go Johnny Davis, or they can go Bilal, if you truly believe in Bilal as a guard. I would be fine with any one of those three. Again, we're not competing for anything this year. We're just trying to, you know, put guys in the right position and kind of let them grow in that role. So I would go, if you put a gun in my head, I'm going to go Poole at the one. I would just throw him in the fire. I would put Bilal at the two, just start him.
Yep.
And then at the three, I would go Kuzma. And then at the four, I would go Denny, and then Gafford. So it's a bigger lineup, but I think it gives you some balance as far as your switchability defensively. And the athleticism that you put on the floor, that's probably how I would go. Maybe you could swap Denny for Kispert, and just move Kuzma down. But I think you need to get bigger in that backcourt, defensively. So that's kind of how I would do.
Yeah, and that's what I would do. So I would put Kispert in, and then I would put Kuzma down to the four. That just because I feel like Bilal and Denny would not be the best offensively, especially to start off the season. Yeah. Now, if Denny comes out and he can do a little bit more off the bounce, and if he can shoot around league average from three, which is about 36% now. So if he can do that, then I think you can get away with it. But I just don't think that that's something you can bank on. And then if you have two bricks like that, and then Gafford can't shoot, then you're looking at Kuzma and Poole, and their driving lanes are going to be clogged up. So it's like, you know, what do we really expect them to do? So I think that having Kispert out there, just for the simple fact that if you do not guard this guy, he will make 8 threes in a game. I think that that would help a lot for Koulibaly, Kuzma, whoever else is on the floor. So.
Yeah, I mean, Kispert legitimately is capable of making 3 threes a night at a 40% clip. Like, those types of shooters are just, you know, they're not, it's not a lot of them. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to space the floor. So, I like the idea of him. I like the idea of him as the starting small forward, and I just feel like that's somebody that Wes Unseld has trusted, you know, really since his, you know, since he got here. So I could definitely see that, but I would like to see them put some more defense in that backcourt next to Jordan Poole.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And again, I think it's nice they can do a number of different things. They can go right. They could go Davis. They could go Koulibaly. So they have some options, which, again, I think is nice. So they'll be able to compete for it and improve it. So the NBA offseason has kind of come to a close. We know what teams are going to look like. Eastern Conference, I think right now, my favorite is probably Boston. But I think that if Milwaukee can stay healthy, I think that they're easily right there. We'll see what happens with Miami and if they actually get Dame Lillard or not. But, you know, they're still going to find a way to be competitive anyway. Cavaliers added Max Strus. And who else did they sign? They signed someone else that's kind of decent.
They got Max Strus and Niang, the other shooter from Philly.
Right, right, yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure they'll be competitive this year. I'm sure the Knicks will be competitive. Brooklyn, maybe not. Yeah, I mean, I think like Boston, Milwaukee, and Miami, I think that those are probably the three you're looking at, especially if Miami fucks around and actually gets Dame at some point.
What you think about the Heat if they get Dame? Because Paul Pierce said something that kind of raised my eyebrow that I hadn't thought about. So if the Heat end up having to trade Tyler Hero plus, you know, maybe another player and then a bunch of picks to get Dame, they were an 8th seed last year.
Mm-hmm.
Does Dame take them from 8th seed to a top 4 seed with his, you know, with his injury history and Jimmy Butler's injury history of late?
Do you think they
need to do another one of those Cinderella, you know, runs where they get in as a 6-7 seed because they can't stay healthy and they don't really have the depth, and then they go and have to just blitz people in the playoffs?
I think, again, and that's why the injuries can be so misleading in terms of how you evaluate a team, because you can be really low in the regular season. Like, even for example, the year that the Wizards were the 8th seed when everyone was banged up, I think it was 2018, and we still ended up making the playoffs that year. And then everyone was like, oh, the Wizards are, you know, going to be pretty competitive in that series. They're a really good 8th seed. Well, yeah, because everyone was hurt all year. And then we ended up winning 2 games, and we could have won that series against Toronto that year. But, you know, so I think that that's kind of how I view Miami. Like, yeah, they may not be healthy, but it's a team that come playoff time you probably don't want to see. I don't think that – I mean, they're already a championship contender, right? So, I mean, they just made the finals, for Christ's sake. So, I mean, it wouldn't make sense for if they get Dame to then not call them a title contender. So I think a lot of it's just going to be matchup dependent in the playoffs. You know, if Miami has to see Boston or Milwaukee in the second round, then – you know, then they might be a second round exit. So, I mean, it just depends on who they see, you know.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, can they continue to kind of bank on, you know, not being healthy during the regular season and then kind of trying to turn it on in the playoffs? Like, I just don't know that that's a sustainable formula, especially with an aging roster. You know, Jimmy Butler, 33, Dame, 33, 34. Like, we're you know, at some point you gotta like you gotta win some games during the regular season so that you don't have to go through a top 3 seed in the first round.
So, you know, if you were Miami, what would you do?
Oh, you try to go get Dame, but I think you need to be also making sure your health department, your medical staff is ready to go. Maybe some of that conditioning that you're doing, you might want to taper that down a little bit, because you might be burning some of your guys out. Like, I don't know. But I think they need to take the regular season a little more serious, because I wouldn't be banking on Giannis missing three games in the first round again. Like, that's just not, you know, I wouldn't bank on that. I would be trying to win as many games during the regular season so I could have home court.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they should try and make the move to get him, but I definitely see your point. And, you know, Miami already is taking a lot of hits to their rotation. Like we already just said, they lost Max Strus. They lost to the Lakers. Yeah. So.
Yeah, for nothing. Like they didn't trade him; they just lost him. And now you're gonna have to give up more to get Dame in. So it's like you're swapping out Vincent, Strus, possibly Tyler Hero, maybe even Duncan Robinson. You know, for salary, you're swapping out four or five players to bring in Dame. Right, like
with no improvement to get better after that. After that, yeah, there is no other way unless Jovic or Hakez comes in and looks like Jokic or Paul George. Like there's no other way to get better after that. Once you do that, that's it.
This was a team that at one point last year was down there in the bottom standings with us. They had a negative point differential during the regular season. You know what I'm saying? So they weren't good during the regular season. Like they just weren't. And then the shooting just flipped for them during the playoffs, and Jimmy went another level. But like, if it was the Wizards and we were an eighth seed, would you want them to go and trade 3, 4, 5 parts to go get a 32-year-old, 33-year-old?
In the context of our team, no. But I guess in the context of Miami's team, it definitely makes a little bit more sense, especially like. You just made the finals, and what was the one thing that they were missing? They were missing a legit scorer. Next to Butler and Bam, right? So, I mean.
Yeah, but they were missing scoring while having Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Tyler Hero, right? Like.
They didn't have Tyler Hero for the finals, and even then, like, if we're talking about from a pure shot creation standpoint, I mean, comparing those guys to Dame, it's like.
No, not individually, no, but I'm just thinking. You were already not that deep of a team already.
Right.
And now you're going to become even a less deeper team acquiring Dame. And again, you were a team that had a negative point differential during the regular season. Like, where are you going to get the supplement of talent in to kind of hold you afloat to get you through that regular season? Because we know Jimmy going to miss games. We know Dame going to miss games. So it's like, when those guys are sitting on the bench, who you playing?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like already that was kind of the situation they were in. Like, Max Strus is a really good shooter. Duncan Robinson is a really good shooter. But we've already seen that when they're not on their game, then they don't provide much for you. Gabe Vincent is a nice, steady player. And he's had some really good moments for them. But is he a guy that can carry you on a consistent basis? You know, no. Yeah. And now you've lost those guys that were already in question. So it's like, well, now who are those guys behind them? I mean, we're talking right now. Haywood Highsmith is probably going to be like their seventh man.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Jovic going to have to come in and play. Like,
where is going to be playing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you getting this veteran, you know, deep veteran talent to come in and can raise their game like that in the playoffs? Like, I'm kind of a little, you know, I don't know. If they make this day move, I'm going to have some questions. Unless maybe they find a way to get off like Kyle Lowry, $30 million and get some guys in for that, then I might have to reassess. But like losing them, that like if they were getting Dame as a free agent, then I wouldn't be saying none of this. Like I would be like, yeah, you know, you add Dame to what they had, a team that made the finals. Okay, that makes sense. But you're going to have to – you lost guys because you was at the cap. You lost them for nothing. And then you're going to have to trade even more to go get Dame. So, like, I don't know. We're going to see, though. Because, like I said, you can't bank on being a 7-8 seed again, being a playing team. Like, you, that's just not sustainable. You, somebody's going to beat you.
And this is my Brian Windhorst moment. Like, now, why is that? Is you just lost two starters that, because in the finals, they were starting Gabe Vincent over Kyle Lowry. So yes, you lost two starters, and neither of them were, like, signed by overwhelming contracts. So, and the Heat could have retained those guys via Bird, right? So why didn't that happen?
Well, we know why.
Like, what's going on?
Yeah, we're, they in the Dame sweepstakes, and they needed the cap flexibility to try to get them in. But it's just like, yeah, I mean, you basically let go two starters, you just let them go for nothing, and you're just hoping that the Blazers are gonna take on, you know, Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson, like. I don't know, man. I don't know. And even Duncan Robinson played well for them in the playoffs. Like, he played out of his mind in the playoffs again.
I'm just trying to, like, if you're Joe Cronin, how far are you willing to go with this before things start getting nasty? Because here's the thing anyway, like, if I'm Joe Cronin, you want to be able to get something for one of the best guards in the game, but at the same time, it's like, look, I already have my backcourt of the future. I have Scoot. I have Sharp. Yeah. If you just want to hang at home and let them play, you may be doing us a favor, kind of. So it's like, I guess, what's your opinion on it, and how do you view their situation and how they should be handling it? Should they completely cave and just give Dame what he wants just to get him out and you get whatever return you get, or do you think that they should try holding on to him and you're just sending him wherever?
I think they playing well. I think the Blazers are playing with house money, man. I wouldn't be in a rush to move them. Like, the Blazers going to be fine regardless, because they, like you said, they got their backcourt of the future. They actually have a surplus of backcourt talent, having Hunt Scoot, having Shaedon Sharpe, and you got Anthony Simons. So it's like, you know, whether we keep Name, move Name, like, we gonna be fine. Like, we got our young talent. We know who we building around going forward. We just waiting for somebody to meet our asking price. And I would still wait on what the hell James Harden does. I would not be rushing to send Dame to the Heat with the James Harden stuff kind of being up in the air. Because if James Harden finesses his way out of Philly and leaves, you know, they have to trade him for whatever. I just don't see Joel Embiid just sitting on his hands and saying, oh yeah, well, for whatever you get back for Harden, you know, some, you know, it's not going to be no real legitimate all-star piece. Okay, we just bank on Tyrese Maxey as my number two. That's going to get us to a championship. Like, it's just no way. He's going to go to that front office and he's going to say, go get me Dame. Or else. Yeah. And now the Blazers, now you're cooking with grease. You're cooking with grease, as Chris Muzzler would say. Right? So that's what I would do. I wouldn't be in a rush to do shit. I'd be just chilling and just waiting for it to play out.
Yeah, I think the thing that sucks for the Blazers is you could get a lot of teams that could get desperate for Dame, but the problem is the teams that are going to get desperate for him probably don't have much to give up. And I think the only team that has the amount that they'd be looking for would be Brooklyn. But I don't think that Brooklyn is like, let's go get him, our window is now kind of thing. Like, I think that they would take him. But I think it's a matter of how much do they actually want to give up in order to get him. Because again, like, you add Dame Lillard to that team, like, yeah, it's a playoff team, but is it a title contender? And I would say no.
It is Brooklyn window, because it ain't like their guys are young. I mean, Mikal Bridges is old. Dinwiddie's older. Cam, yeah. He came in as a 22 or 23-year-old. Cam Johnson is like 26, 27. Like,
yeah.
Is old. Like, they don't, the only young guy they got is Nick Claxton, for real, and Cam Thomas.
Yeah. Damn, I didn't know Bridges was that old. I thought he was like 24.
Nah, he was a senior coming out of Nova.
Damn. Yeah, so, I mean,
But again, is Dame going to be happy with that? And that's where I think it's kind of, I get it from a player standpoint, but at the same time, it's like, man, if you have a team that's out there that's willing to trade for you and is going to pay you money, you put your uniform on and you go play for them. So, I mean,
on the contract, like, fuck that. You on the contract, man. Yeah. He's not going to pull a Ben Simmons. I just don't see that. He going to play.
Yeah.
Like, he on the contract, what, for another 4 years?
Who?
Dame.
Let me look real quick. Damian Lillard contract. Yeah, I think. He's a free agent in 2025, so no. Only 2 years. And that's if he opts into his player option next year at 48 mil, which there's a good chance he could opt out of that.
So how many guaranteed years he got left? This year coming and then one more?
Just this year, because next year's a player option.
Oh, shit. I don't know why.
Hold on. There's an extension down here I didn't see. Hold on.
I could have sworn he just signed or he just read up.
Okay, so he signed a 2-year extension. So he'll have a player option in 2027 or 2026 offseason.
Okay, so he's got three years guaranteed that he's going to play. So for whoever trades for him, he got to play 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he ain't sitting out, man. So I'm making a deal.
Yeah.
Making a deal. I just think he got too much pride to just pull a Ben Simmons, man.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Like, why are you only so hellbent on playing for Miami? Like, what is so bad about Brooklyn or some of these other teams that would be trading for you? And the teams that you wouldn't want to play for are probably ass and don't want to give up their draft capital to get you anyway, because at that point it's like you're just trying to sell tickets at that point, which I think would be kind of sleazy. So, I mean, out of all the competitive teams that would want you, and I that's why I think Brooklyn is the best fit for all sides, because they have the capital to give up that Portland would probably be looking for. And it's a team where he can still be the top option offensively, because again, they don't have anyone else. They're starting five right now, and Brooklyn is Dinwiddie, Bridges, Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Nick Claxton. So I mean, they need someone else,
but nobody that's winning the U.S. championship. So yeah, I mean, he would fit there. They would send out Dinwiddie and stuff. Yeah. And then a bunch of picks.
And if you're Portland too, like, you could probably still maybe come away with Noah Clowney or Derek Whitehead or something like that, if you don't want to give up the 4 or 5 first round picks or whatever. You know, there's different ways that you can get a deal done there, as to where, like, Miami, it's like one way you can get it done, and I hate it for Portland.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the team that will offer the most picks. You know, but I don't know. I just think, I think the Blazers playing with house money. They don't need to rush to take that Tyler Hero package.
Yeah. We can do Western Conference another episode, so we'll save that for another time. But do you have any closing thoughts, anything league-wise that you wanted to go over before we cut this one?
No, that's all I got, buddy.
All right. Well, sounds good then. Well, I want to thank you guys for taking the time to listen to another episode. If you're not already subscribed, please make sure that you are. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.